Part 1. We shall not cease from exploration, and the end of all our exploring will be to arrive where we started and know the place for the first time. T.S. Eliot, Four Quartets. Chapter 1. The agency had hired me to retire Belghazi, not to protect him. So if this didn't go well, their next candidate for a retirement package would probably be me. But the way I saw it, saving Belghazi from the guy I now thought of as Karate would be doing Uncle Sam a favor. After all, Karate could fail to make it look natural, or get caught, or do some other sloppy thing, and then there would be misunderstandings and suspicions and accusations, exactly the kinds of problems the agency had hired me to avoid. Of course, there was also the matter of my getting paid. If Karate got to Belghazi first and I couldn't claim credit, I might be out of a check, and that wouldn't be very fair, would it? I thought of this guy as Karate because my suspicions about him had first gelled when I saw him doing karate kata, or forms, in the gym of the Macau Mandarin Oriental Hotel, where we were both staying and where Belghazi was soon to arrive. Avoiding the facility's tangle of life cycles and Cybex machines, he had focused instead on a series of punches, blocks, and kicks to the air that, to the uninitiated, might have looked like some kind of martial dance routine. Actually, his moves were good, smooth, practiced, and powerful. They would have been impressive in any 20-year-old, but this guy looked at least twice that. I do some similar solo exercises myself from time to time, although nothing so formal and stylized. And when I do work out this way, I don't do it in public. It draws too much attention, especially from someone who knows what to look for, someone like me. In my line of work, drawing attention is a serious violation of the laws of common sense, and therefore of survival. Because if someone notices you for one thing, he'll be inclined to look more closely, at which point he might notice something else. A pattern, which would have remained quietly hidden, might then begin to emerge, after which your cloak of anonymity will be methodically pulled apart, probably to be rewoven into something more closely resembling a shroud. Karate also stood out because he was Caucasian. European was my guess, although I couldn't pinpoint the country. He had close-cropped black hair, pale skin, and when he wasn't busy with horse stance to spinning back kick number 2 in the Mandarin Oriental gym, favored exquisitely thin-soled loafers and sport jackets with hand-rolled lapels. Macau's population of about 500,000 is 95% Chinese, with only a small Portuguese contingent remaining to remind anyone who cares that Macau, now a Chinese special administrative region like Hong Kong, was not so long ago a Portuguese colony. Even the millions of annual gambling tourists are almost all from nearby Hong Kong, Taiwan, and mainland China, so non-Asians don't exactly blend. Which is part of the reason the agency had been so eager for me to take on the Belghazi assignment to begin with. It wasn't just that Belghazi had become a primary supplier to various Southeast Asian fundamentalist groups whom, post-9/11, Uncle Sam had come to view as a serious threat. Nor was it simply my demonstrated knack for the appearance of natural causes, which in this case would be necessary because it seemed Belghazi had protectors among certain allied governments whom Uncle Sam preferred not to offend. It was also because the likely venue for the job would require invisibility against an Asian background. And although my mother had been American, my face is dominated by my father's Japanese features, the consequence of genetic chance, augmented years ago by some judicious plastic surgery, which I had undergone to better blend in Japan. So between the conspicuous ethnicity and the kata moves, Karate had managed to put himself on my radar screen, and then I began to notice more. For one thing, he had a way of hanging around the hotel, the gym, the cafe, the terrace, the lobby. Wherever this guy was from, he'd come a long way to reach Macau. His failure to get out and see the sights, therefore, didn't make a lot of sense, unless he was waiting for someone. Of course, I might have suffered from a similar form of conspicuousness, but I had a companion, a young Japanese woman, which made the hanging around behavior a little more explainable. Her name was Keiko, or at least that was how she billed herself with the Japanese escort agency through which I had hired her. She was in her mid-twenties, too young for me to take seriously, but she was pretty and surprisingly bright, and I was enjoying her company. More important, her presence made me look less like some kind of intelligence operative or lone wolf killer assessing the area, and more like a 40 or 50-something Japanese who had taken his mistress to Macau, maybe for a little gambling, maybe for a lot of time alone at a hotel. One morning, Keiko and I went down to the hotel's Café Girasol to enjoy the breakfast buffet. As the hostess led us to a table, I scanned the area for signs of danger, as I do by habit whenever entering a room. Hotspots first. Back corner one, table of four young people, two male, two female, dressed for a hike. Accents Australian, threat probability low. Back corner two, karate, threat probability medium. Keep the eyes moving, complete the sweep. Wall tables, empty, window seats, elderly Chinese couple. Next table, three girls, fashionable clothes, confident postures, probably Hong Kong Chinese, young professionals on a quick holiday. Next table, pair of Indian men in business attire, sunny Punjabi accents. Nothing rubbed me the wrong way. Back to Karate's vicinity with an oblique glance. He had his back to the wall and an unobstructed view of the restaurant's entrance. His seating position was what I would have expected from a pro. His focus on the room offered further evidence. I noted he had a newspaper open in front of him, although he wasn't bothering to read it. He would have been better off without the reading material. Then he could have scoped the room as though he was bored and had nothing better to do than people watch. Or he should have brought a friend, as I had. I could feel him looking at us at one point and was glad to have Keiko there, smiling into my eyes like a satisfied lover. The smile was convincing, too. She was good at her job. Who was he waiting for, though? I might have assumed the answer was me. Only the paranoid survive, I think some Silicon Valley type once said, but I was pretty sure I wasn't it. Too many chance sightings followed by nothing. No attempts to follow me, no attempt to recognize my face, no hard-eyed, that's him, kind of feeling. After over a quarter century in the business and a lot of incidental training before that, I'm sensitive to these things. My gut told me he was after someone else. True, it wasn't impossible. He was only told where and when, with information on who to be provided subsequently, but I deemed that scenario unlikely. Not many operators would agree to take this kind of job without first knowing who they were going up against. It would be hard to know how to price things otherwise. If the matter had been local, say a triad dispute, it was unlikely a white guy would have been brought in for the job. The triads, Chinese crime syndicates with deep roots in Macau and the mainland, tend to settle their affairs themselves. Adding up the available data, therefore, and taking myself off the short list of possible targets, I was left with Bill Ghazi as the most likely recipient of Karate's attentions. But who had hired him? If it had been the agency, it would have been a violation of one of my three rules: no women or children, no acts against non-principals, no B-teams. Maybe my old friends from the government thought that because they had managed to track me down in Rio, I was vulnerable, and that they could therefore treat my rules as mere guidelines. If this was indeed their assumption, they were mistaken. I had enforced my rules before, and would do so again. That afternoon, I made a point of strolling past the gym with Keiko, and sure enough, there was my friend, earnestly kicking the air at the same time as the day before. Some people just need a routine and refuse to accept the consequences of predictability. In my experience, these people tend to get culled, often sooner, sometimes later. It's a Darwinian world out there. Seeing an opportunity, I checked the sign-in sheet. His name was illegible, but he had written his room number clearly enough. 812. A smoking floor. Unhealthy. I asked Keiko if she wouldn't mind shopping by herself for a little while. She smiled and told me she'd be delighted, which was probably true. She might have thought I was going off for a taste of Macau's sumptuous buffet of prostitutes. No doubt she assumed I was married, the resulting associated paranoia of which would explain any counter-surveillance moves she might have noticed, and I doubted she would have found the notion of additional philandering excessively shocking. Watching her walk out the front entrance to catch a cab into town, I felt an odd surge of affection. Most people would think of someone in Keiko's line of work as being anything but innocent, but at that moment, to me, innocence practically defined her. Her job was to offer me pleasure, and she was doing very well at it, and for her, our presence on Macau was no more complicated than that. She was as oblivious to the deadly dance playing out around her as a sheep grazing in a field. I promised myself she would go home with that innocence intact.